So Easter is a miracle, and I want to follow on a little bit from what Nicole said. It's a great thing, this miracle, but it does have a meaning, and she began to unfold for us a little bit what the meaning of Easter is, and I want to take a few minutes to unfold it maybe a little bit more together with you this morning. You know, God's not just showing off on Easter, right? Just kind of saying, well, look what I can do. There's a real purpose to the raising of Jesus Christ and the work and the life of Jesus Christ. And it's a beautiful purpose, and it's good, and it's true, and it's awesome when you think about the power involved, and it's profound, and it's relevant to our lives. And let's spend a few moments trying to understand that a little bit more this morning. Now, when you reflect on Easter, and really ultimately the life of Jesus, one of the best ways to do that is to go backwards a little bit in time from the day of Easter, in the story of the life of Jesus, to go backwards and look at what he said about his purpose and his life that culminated in Easter, and understand from that perspective what was really going on. That's what we're going to do this morning. We're going to rewind the tape a little bit as we reflect on Easter and think about what Jesus said was his purpose. So would you open with me to the Gospel of Mark, chapter 10, verse 45. And if you don't have a Bible, we would love to share one with you. It's on page 703 that we're going to be looking at, and I always encourage people to follow along. I think there's something special about reading it in the text. It'll have a little bit more weight for you, maybe understand, look back at what I'm talking about, and see it there right in front of you. So page 703, Mark 10, verse 45 is where we're going to end up. Let me give you a little bit of background before we get into this. First of all, the story begins here in this part of the life of Jesus with the disciples. Two of the disciples, there's 12 disciples, two of them come up and they ask Jesus, can we sit on your right and left hand? They want to be numbers 2 and 3 in the kingdom, okay, these guys. And Jesus has a couple of answers for them. He says, first of all, you don't know what you're asking. That's the first thing he says. I think in their minds they had all these dreams of fame, you know, and maybe a little bling bling as they were thinking about all the stuff that they would get and how it would be to be, you know, when Jesus comes into his kingdom, it would be to be number 2 and 3. And Jesus is saying to them, you know, you don't understand what it really means to be number 2 and 3 in the kingdom. And he's going to unfold that in just a minute. But he says a second thing first. He says, moreover, it's not mine to give to you. In other words, the Father is the one in heaven, is the one who controls who gets the place of honor. And I can't give it to you. Well, let's pick up the story here in verse 41. When the other 10 found out that the 2 had asked if they could sit on number, you know, seat 2 and 3 next to Jesus, they had this response. When the 10 heard, verse 41, about this, they became indignant with James and John. Those are the ones who asked. And I don't think it's because they had loftier ideals of humility and service and sacrifice. I think that why they were upset is because they wanted to be number 2 and 3. They didn't want somebody else to usurp their position. And so here's Jesus with these 12, and they're all in a tizzy. They're all frustrated with one another, and he does what happens in homes all the time. He sits down all his children, right? And he says, we're going to have a little talk. Verse 42, Jesus called them together and said, you know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. He's just saying this is the typical way of the world. This is what you've experienced when you've encountered leadership. People use their position of power for their own selfish and personal gain. In fact, the coin that the disciples would have been holding or using all the time had a picture of the emperor on it, and below that picture of the emperor were inscribed these words, he who deserves adoration. That's how the emperor was viewed. He who deserves adoration. And no doubt, these disciples hated that kind of a thing. They hated to see, you know, people using their power for selfish and personal gain. And yet here they are, and you know, isn't this just the human way? They're caught up in doing the same thing as they're asking to sit on the right and the left of Jesus. Well, Jesus is about to teach them a very different way of looking at life. And in this teaching, it really goes to the core of who Jesus is, and it goes to the core of the culmination of the life of Jesus, which is what we celebrate at Easter time, his going to the cross, his burial, and his resurrection. And at the core of it is this lesson that Jesus is about to share with the disciples. Verse 43. Not so with you. In other words, not lording it over authority and power for personal gain, all of that kind of a thing. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. And then here's the point in verse 45. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served. Jesus referred to himself as the Son of Man. Did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. The purpose of Jesus' life, culminating in the Easter activities that we celebrate every year, was to serve. The purpose of his life was to serve. It says, even the Son of Man. This term hints at his power and his authority. In the Old Testament, it talked about the Son of Man coming on the clouds in power and authority. And when Jesus refers to himself in Mark as this, he's hinting at this power and authority he has. Look in the Bible elsewhere. You see that Jesus is greater than the greatest priest or the greatest prophet or the greatest king. The Bible makes pains to describe Jesus as being greater than all of those. He's greater than the greatest people in the Bible, David, Abraham, Elijah, Moses. Jesus could calm the sea. He could raise the dead. He could heal the sick. He could teach the unenlightened. And today, really, if you think about it, he remains the greatest figure in the history of the world. He has more authority over people than anybody else in the history of the world. Jesus, still today. Compared to the guy on the coin, the emperor that was on that coin, Jesus is much more powerful. Much greater. But what does he do with this power? What does he do with this authority that he has? He doesn't lord it over. He chooses to serve, to sacrifice, to offer himself. Now it's important that we understand how Jesus served. It tells us in this text very clearly. It says he gave himself as a ransom. The word of that word, the root of that word is this verb to loose. You know, if you loose something. And when you put it in a noun form like this, it refers to something that's used to loose something that's held captive by somebody else. Okay? It's the object that's used to gain the release of somebody or something that's been held captive. So the word is used oftentimes with respect to a prisoner of war who's being held captive, and the soldiers on his side would give something in order to secure his release, a ransom. Or a slave who'd been enslaved for years and years but had been saving dutifully and finally had acquired enough of those coins to give to his owner and buy back his freedom. So this is how this word works. But in this case, who's the captive? We're the captive, Jesus says. The people, we the people are captives. And why are we captives? It's because we're held by our sin. And sin simply is anything that's not what God intends for the world. And God stands against sin. He stands against the things that he doesn't intend for the world, the things that we that are bad and harmful to other people, which is, if you have a God, it's a good thing if that God stands against what's bad, right? And that's what this God does. He stands against what's evil and what's bad, and what's broken, and what's wrong. But here's the catch with that. Because he stands against what's bad, he also stands against us on one level, because we are the perpetrators of, the participators in, evil things and bad things. And so we're captive because of our participation in what's wrong in this world. And there's not one of us sitting here this morning who hasn't participated in some way in the wrong in this world. Not one of us can say that we have not sinned. And so we're held captive, Jesus says, by this. But what if somebody could offer a ransom to free us from this captivity? Wouldn't that be wonderful? When it turns out, the Bible tells us that somebody can. And that somebody is God in heaven. And the only catch, though, is this ransom that he's going to offer is very expensive, because it's his own son. See, in order for a ransom to work properly, it has to be of greater worth than the thing that it's been being given for. And the life of Jesus Christ is worth more than all of the sins that we have committed. And so it's the proper ransom. By the way, a little theological pet peeve that I have here with this idea of ransom. Some of you perhaps have received one of those emails that talks about a father and an infant son or a toddler son, and the father is in some dilemma where he has to choose between giving up his son and saving all of these people on a train, you know, that's coming because the son's in the gears or something like this, and the father makes this choice to give up his son and save all the people on the train. And the idea of these emails, has anybody received any of these? Some of you have. The idea is to say that God is like that. He's willing to give his son for us. You know, well, here's the thing. On one level, that's true. But on another level, we need to remember this. Jesus was an adult when he gave his life for us. He went to that cross willingly. His father asked him. He was not a helpless victim. And he went on his own strength and decision. And there was a moment when he could have called down all the angels in heaven and saved him from this trauma and this death. And at that moment, Jesus Christ steeled himself. He set his jaw, okay? He picked up that heavy cross on his shoulder. And, you know, he proceeded forward towards that death hill without anything getting in his way. He's not a helpless victim. He is a man who took the weight of the world onto his shoulders and proceeded willingly to offer himself on our behalf. It's an important theological point to remember. Because we don't have a God who sacrifices some little helpless child. We have a God who works in tandem with his Son and figures out a way to do something absolutely beautiful. And let me tell you why I think it's so beautiful. In this act of Jesus going to the cross and offering himself, two things take place. On the one hand, God remains just because he declares in that act that evil is bad, that bad is bad. What happens in the world that's wrong is not okay. And we need that. The sense of justice inside of us needs to know that bad is bad. And the things that have been done to us that are wrong, in fact. God will not just sweep them under the rug and pretend that they didn't happen. There is justice in the world. That's what the cross says on the one side. But then on the other side, it says this. Not only is God just, but he's the justifier. He's the justifier. In other words, by giving his son and through Jesus Christ going to the cross, he has figured out a way to pay the ransom that releases us from captivity to sin and the death life that follows as a result. It's a beautiful thing. God is both just on the one hand and justifier on the other. And in that, he maintains his integrity. And we have the hope of a heaven where sin is rooted out, where everything is perfect and good because God hasn't lost his sense of justice. And yet we have a hope of being reconciled to God because mercy has been shown towards us. What we couldn't do, God has done in Jesus Christ. And it's a beautiful thing. That's the story of a ransom. We've been watching this actually all week long if you've been following the news. A very powerful story of the ransom with the whole pirate ship incident that's been taking place. And the reports are, the New York Times is reporting that pirate ship the regular ship that was taken over by pirates, the crew overcame them, the pirates, and was able to regain the control of the ship. But somehow, mixed in that, was the captain of the ship offering himself to the pirates as a sort of ransom for their release. It's a beautiful thing because not only were the crew valuable, but the cargo was valuable in that ship. They're carrying for organizations like World Vision and other relief organizations all kinds of food to places where there are hungry people. And that ship has now arrived to deliver those goods, to serve those communities, because this captain was willing to offer himself a ransom. That's what it means. And that's what Jesus has done. And the question this morning for us to consider, the first one is this. Are you captive this morning? Are you captive this morning? Are you in the cell of your own sin? Are you staring at the death life? And those of us who've experienced sin and come and faced it head on, we know always that it leads to death. It leads to bad things. And in this life, and death in the next life. And we stare at it and we recognize it for what it is and we don't want it. But we feel captive. We feel captive because we can't free ourselves from this prison. And the question is this morning, are you captive to your sin? God is offering to pay the ransom. Not just offering, He's already paid it. And in a sense, opened the door of the cell. And what remains for us to do is simply to get up and walk out. To walk out of the cell that sin has us imprisoned in. And the Bible is really clear on how you do that, how you walk out. You walk out of that prison by faith. By faith in Jesus Christ. Romans 10:9, if you confess with your lips that Jesus is Lord, and you believe in your heart that God raised Him from the dead, you will be saved. And we could go on and on with verses that essentially communicate that same point. Getting up out of the cell is placing your trust in Jesus Christ. And maybe this morning as you're thinking about this scripture, there is welling up inside of you even just a shred of faith. A piece of you, a part of you that says, I want to trust in you, Jesus. I don't understand everything about you yet. I don't have all my questions answered. I've still got some things that I'd like to explore. But there's a part of me that's ready to take that step of faith and to trust you. And if that's welling up in you this morning, that's real. That's the Holy Spirit moving in your life. It's Jesus Christ calling you to Himself. And He knows what's going on in your heart. And He hears you. And He's ready to bring you in and to unleash you from this captivity that you've been in. So the first thing that we really understand here is that Jesus is our ransom. He is the ransom payment. But there's a second piece of this that's really important. And that is that He serves. Now, the nature of His service is unique. Nobody else could offer themselves as a ransom like Jesus does. And the reason is because Jesus is perfect. He lives a perfect life, and He's a perfect Son of God. So His service is special. Nobody else could do it. It's unique. But the idea that we would serve, that people are meant to serve, that is not unique to Jesus. That is something that is meant for every single one of us. Jesus makes it very clear in this. He's a model for us. Verse 43 says, not so with you. Any authority, any power that you have is not to be used to lord over others. Not so with you, He says. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. Slave of all. Powerful words that Jesus is using. The idea is that the result of being ransomed is service. Okay? We're not set free to go and be selfish about our lives. We're set free to become servants of others. We all know about John 3:16, right? For God so loved the world that He gave His one and only Son. Well, what about 1 John 3:16? Says this. This is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down His life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers. So it's John 3:16, which we talked about in the ransom, but it's also 1 John 3:16. Once you're released, it's not for your own selfish gain, so it's so that you would serve others and offer your life for the sake of others. We're set free to serve and to sacrifice. In this series, we've been talking about what it is that we as human beings are meant for. We're meant for worship. We're meant for relationship. These are the last 2 weeks. And here we have a third one. We are meant for service. And until we get that right, our lives are going to have a void in them. The way God intended us to live is to be people who serve and who sacrifice for others. And to have a meaningful life means to incorporate this into who we are. And Jesus helps us. Once we're freed from captivity, we're released to serve. This is the way God intended us to be. I've been turned on to the book, As We Forgive, this last week. It's by Catherine Larson, and it's true stories of reconciliation between tribes in Rwanda, where they experienced some of the most brutal and horrific battles between factions that I think just about ever. And these stories are absolutely beautiful stories of how God is working in the midst of that strife and that pain and that history to bring about healing. And one of the stories is about a Tutsi woman named Rosaria. And let me tell you the story of Rosaria. She lost her sister and her sister's children to one of her neighbors who, at the hands of some of the Hutus, was forced to pummel using blunt instruments to death her sister and her sister's children. And these neighbors of hers, who she'd known all of her life, were soon taken away and put into prison as things, the culture, the wave began to change. And they're in prison, these men who've killed her sister, but they're only there for a little while because there's so many people in the prisons that they can't hold them all. So they start releasing the people who haven't done as bad of things as the other ones. So these murderers get released because they're not as bad, I guess, as some of the other ones. And where do they get released to? Back to the village, right? Where Rosaria is. And so here she is, waiting and expecting these murderers of her family to come back to the village. But something has happened to them while they were that short while in prison. These men came face to face with their sin, and they were broken. And they understood that Jesus Christ had been offered a ransom to release them from the captivity of their sin. And they accepted that by faith. And in their brokenness, they were beginning to live a new life. And they came back to the village, and they found her, and they were on their knees, and they begged her for forgiveness. And courageously, she showed them forgiveness. But she wasn't able to trust them still. You can understand. And time went on, and these men decided, we're going to do something to help bring her trust, earn her trust. She was poor. They built her a house. But she wouldn't go live in the house because she still didn't trust them. One day, she's struggling. The crops are coming in, and she's by herself, and she can't bring in all the harvest. And this is her livelihood for the whole year, and she's in dire straits. And up the dusty road come walking some men. And imagine what she would have felt the first time she sees them on the road walking up. A mixture of fear and uncertainty, right? And they walk in, and they pick up the tools, and they begin to harvest. And before long, they take care of all of the harvest that she has. And it begins to restore her trust. And not long after that, she walks over to the house that they've built for her. And she stands in front of it with her little daughter. And she is finally broken to the point of being able to accept this gift that these reformed killers have made for her. Here's what Larson says to Rosaria. She writes, "It hardly seemed possible that hands that had swung a machete in violence had been the very same hands to smooth clay bricks and stack them into a home for her and her daughter." That's the whole story right there. That's how it works. First ransom, right? And faith. And then service. These men were released from two prisons. They were released from the physical prison, but they were released from the spiritual prison that they were in. And once they were released, what did they do with that freedom? They didn't use it for their own selfish gain. They used it to serve others. And they came back to their village, and they served, and they built homes, and they helped others, and they were totally transformed. They chose to use their freedom to serve, just like Jesus said that He was doing. Just like He said the cross is for, and the reason behind it, and the meaning of it. Well, a beautiful thing is happening in our congregation over the next 2 weeks. We're going to celebrate both of these things, faith and service. Okay? Next week, we're going to have a baptism. And we're going to celebrate how it is that God in Christ releases people from captivity. That's what baptism is all about. And then the week after that, we're going to have a big service project. Where we go out and we work in the homes of the elderly and the needy people in this area to serve. Okay? To use the freedom that we've been given, not for selfish purposes, but to serve. And I just want to say about this congregation that the level of service has increased. And I think God is very pleased with that. Yesterday we were at the UC Village, and we thought we would just try doing a little Easter egg hunt for the children in the UC Village yesterday. And so Nicole, our children's ministries director, organized this, and they put out some flyers and stuff. Well, over 200 people showed up for this thing. And it was so beautiful to see the members of this congregation laying it down and serving people and, you know, focused and on fire and sort of motivated and doing whatever needed to be done in order to bless these children and to give them an opportunity to hear about what Jesus has done. This is happening in many different spots. It's happening programmed ways and unprogrammed ways. But I want to say this. When we go out and we serve, count me in a couple of weeks, UC Village yesterday, it's not so that we can do a few random acts of kindness, okay? The goal of this serving is so that deep down in the core of our beings, we would begin to be transformed. So that not only do we serve in one moment, 1 week, and another moment a few weeks later, but our whole approach to life is one that is characterized by service and sacrifice for others. That's why we're doing this. Because Jesus Christ said that His purpose was to serve and to sacrifice. And that once ransomed, ours is the same. Every moment of every day, in every context, with your family, with your coworkers, with the people that you meet on the street, with strangers, that is to be who we are as followers of Christ. People who serve. There's a special kind of a ransom story. It ends with the ransom being returned, right? The ransom's given. Whatever it is that needs to be released from captivity is attained. And then the ransom is gotten back. Those are the good stories, right? And that's the story of Easter. Easter is a ransom story in which there's a return. Jesus is given, and then He's returned. That's what the resurrection says. And what it says is that not only has He been given, but you can be certain that sin has been defeated. The Bible is very clear that the consequence of sin is death. So if Jesus has been raised from the dead, then He must have defeated sin. And that exclamation point gives us confidence that the sin that held us captive has been finally and fully defeated. See, the Easter story is not a good news, the good news, and then the bad news. The good news is that Jesus gave His life and you're freed from captivity. The bad news is that He died. No, Easter's a good news and a good news. Because the good news is that He gave His life and you've been freed from captivity. And then the good news is that God brought Him back from the dead, and He's living today. It's a good news story. And it's our story too. Initially, whenever we sacrifice, whenever we serve, whenever we offer to be slave, there is a loss. There is a death in us. It hurts. It's painful. It's a struggle. But like that home that was built for Rosaria, our loss ends up in all kinds of little resurrections. Right? That's what we're doing when we serve. We're just following in the one who gave us the central and greatest resurrection of all. And when we see, you know, whatever it is, the smile on Rosaria's face with her little daughter walking into this home and having a safe place to live, then we know, just like Jesus knew, when it was all done, that it's worth it. That the sacrifice, the serving, the initial sense of loss is worth it. Because we have a faithful God who turns all of our loss into gain. Turns all of our death into resurrection. When we celebrate communion together, it's a time for us to pause and respond to God. Maybe in this text this morning, God has been speaking into your life. Maybe you're one of those people in whom is welling up a streak of faith. That beginning desire to say, Jesus, you know, I actually think I'm ready to put my trust in you. I believe in you. And as we celebrate communion this morning, there would be no better way for you to mark this day than to walk forward with us and to take the bread and to dip it in the cup and to say in that sort of outward way, Jesus, I am placing my trust in you. I'm accepting the ransom payment you've made on my behalf, and I'm declaring to you from this day forward that it's my intention, even though I know I'm going to mess up over and over again, it's my intention to live an unselfish life, a life in service of you and others. Some of you may have made that decision a long time ago, and this morning, as you sit here, you're being convicted that you have lived selfishly, and that there's some area in life that you've been grasping onto, holding onto, that you have not yet turned over to Christ. You've been unwilling to make a sacrifice. You've been unwilling to serve somebody. You've avoided the pain, the initial pain, and as a result, you're missing out on the resurrection that comes later. And as you sit and meditate before coming forward, pray to God. Ask Him for strength. Ask Him to help you to make a new decision, to show you ways to sacrifice, and declare to Him in faith, Jesus, I am going to live for you today and tomorrow and the next day.